Lord the hell out of the whole world and then kill them when they want what they deserve. It's not fine, it's not right. Gonna lay me down and I lay back and watch, lay back and watch as we pour in each other now. Lay back and watch, watch as we bomb, as we pour in each other now.
From Danielle Savage and her album, one of the few of hers I apparently have easily handy. If it has limbs, it's probably useless. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org on the net, and archived at huffsantacruz.org. In case you miss a show, you don't want to miss a single one of these shows, and want to review it. This program is called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It airs twice weekly. Lots of good stuff here on Free Radio, and we need your help, of course. This is the brief pitch. 427-4523 is the voicemail in case you want to kick down to Free Radio, or in case you're interested in more information about it, or in case you have a public service announcement you'd like us to pass on, or in case you have a complaint you'd like us to register. 427-4523. Now, that's not the number to call if you want to talk to me on air. That's another number, and that number is 427-FRSC, which is also 3772. 427-3772 is the number to call to get on air with me. I'm Robert Norris, and for the next 2 hours, I'm going to be holding down the mic and running you through a variety of tapes, mostly. The first tape is an interview, I should say rather a recording, of the Downtown Neighbors Tuesday monthly meeting, which apparently they hold. They move about the city, apparently. I don't mean the Downtown Neighbors. I mean the Santa Cruz Neighbors, in case I said Downtown Neighbors. Santa Cruz Neighbors are a group of, well, they seem to be run by somewhat conservative people like Lynn Robinson, Michael Bethke, and the person who was sort of the mistress of ceremonies or master of ceremonies, Deborah Elston, I believe her name was the person who chaired the last presentation, which was in the community room of the police station in downtown Santa Cruz. And I was there. I actually wrote about and invited people to it. You can go online if you want to catch my analysis, both of my sense of what the meeting was going to be about and what it turned out to be about. And I'm going to, of course, play a bit of it and let some of the perps speak for themselves. There are two people speaking at the meeting. One was Ken Cole, who is the head of the Homeless Services Center Executive Director, which is sort of some people call it the homeless concentration camp. Others call it the collection of inadequate but still useful and meaningful homeless services. Others feel it's the best in the West. I guess if you talk to Ryan Coonerty, you'll get praises like that about how wonderful Santa Cruz is in terms of the amount of money it spends for homeless services. He's a council member and he's our vice mayor. However, undeservedly. Now, Ken spoke for about 45 minutes. We're not going to play all of that. I'm going to play some of it. After that, we had Officer Eric Seeley of the Santa Cruz Police Department, who is also the homeless resource officer. And I will play less of Eric, and actually I'll try to play what transpired at the end of the meeting when I actually tried to ask the officer a straight question. And you'll get to hear that. If you want to call in at any point with comments, criticisms, or rude noises of any sort, you can. 427, again, 3772 is the phone number. And in about half an hour, we will be getting a call perhaps from Becky Johnson, who is going to do a kind of a memorial for a man who died a year ago today, by her calculations, Chris Brozda, who is a homeless activist and far to the left of most of us in some respects, and way out in space from the perspective of others, but a man who died a year ago, and she wants to remember him, so she may be calling in on that, about that time, about 6:30, 6:40, around there. So let's begin with the Homeless Service Center Executive Director talking to the Santa Cruz neighbors, and what, again, to sort of give you sort of the scene, the setting, there were about, 30 people in the room, seated in chairs as these two men kind of made their presentation, controlled the meeting. I provided brownies outside, actually hot brownies, ordinary, not psychedelic brownies, but tasty brownies. And actually, my hat's off to Jumbo Gumbo Joe Schultz. So you may remember India Joe's restaurant. Joe Schultz, who's been arrested for feeding the homeless, was doing it again because these brownies were intended for people who came to this Downtown Neighbors, which has been closely connected with the police department, concerned with, you know, getting rid of campers, sleepers in the neighborhood, not particularly concerned with putting in public bathrooms or restoring civil rights to poor people or inviting homeless people in as members of the community. No, rather they are property owners, homeowners, I guess to some extent tenants, who are more concerned with their neighborhood and, you know, its upkeep as a sort of a middle-class endeavor. Not that being middle class is necessarily a bad thing, but if you are working with the police department and agree with their definitions of things, like the infamous broken windows theory, which actually Eric Seeley spoke about, saying that, you know, it's a fine theory, it's an important way of policing, to regard a homeless person as a kind of a broken window. Now, he didn't talk about a homeless person as a broken window, but the idea that he conveyed and the idea that was conveyed with this whole theory of policing is you don't let sort of disreputable or poor people kind of hang around in public spaces because that's kind of like a broken window, and it just creates a trend, and that creates more crime and more broken windows. You know, that's the nits make lice theory. Let's wipe them out and drive them away before they become a bad habit and a real infestation in our community. So, again, if you want to read my take on this, go online to indybay.org, IndyBay.org, and look up the story, Brownies Against Bigotry, Stroll and Speak to the Santa Cruz Neighbors. And you can also, I'm going to be posting this, the whole tape, at that website so you'll be able to hear it. Actually, I'll be posting a link to the show. If you want the whole tape, you're going to have to call me on the Huff line. And that's something you can do, by the way, if you'd like to do a report, any concerns you have about what's happening outside on the streets as far as police misconduct or bureaucratic abuse, as far as poor people go, or concerns you have about, you know, unjust situations generally, you can give a call to 423-4833. 423-HUFF. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it's also my voicemail. So give me a call if you want to be on the air. If you have some new information, if you have some thoughts about the situation that you want to pass on privately, again, 423-HUFF. All right, so it's off to the Santa Cruz Neighbors, night before last, held at the somewhat structured community room of the police department. I must say there weren't a lot of police hanging around threatening people. There was Eric Seeley in plainclothes, who's a threat enough. And I think in the back there was Sergeant Colleen McMahon in uniform, armed and so forth. Dangerous, I suppose, but also a uniformed police officer. And there was a room that was fairly full, and there were about, oh, I'd say 5 or 10 homeless slash poor people who had come in response to the flyers we put out and the brownies we were offering. And here's some of what happened. Here's some of what was said, anyway.
Tonight we have a meeting with Ken Cole, who's the executive director for the Homeless Resource Center, and he is here to present what his organization does for the homeless and all the many different facets and how they connect. Also, we have Eric Seeley, who is here from the police department, and he is the homeless resource officer. And so he's going to tell you some of his experiences and how he works in the department, and then he also works with all the different agencies in the town as well. So, Ken, would you start us off?
Sure.
Well, good evening. Can people hear me fairly comfortably?
We do have a microphone, and if anybody needs to do the mic thing, I feel like it's saying a comment for a while.
We better hear you.
Huh?
We can hear you.
Good.
So it's, I'm very glad to be here. I live on Eastside Santa Cruz, up off Morrissey. We're just talking about my neighborhood. And my wife and I have been living there since about the year 2000. We're raising two girls, school age. So one of the things I like to try to start with is, if you're coming from a neighborhood perspective, is that we all, you know, live in neighborhoods. You know, we are all part of one city. And my organization, the Homeless Services Center, happens to be a nonprofit group that specializes in services for one facet of our community. And it's a very special need, special group that I've had the pleasure of working with my whole, pretty much my whole social work career. I started in the ancient days of the mid-1970s, if anybody remembers our planet when it was in the 1970s. Seems like a long time ago. Started in social work. I worked for about 8 years at a community mental health center in Seattle, and I was not terribly brilliant as a therapist or a counselor. I found a lot of people who were very good at that to kind of model, and I said, well, that's not me. So I looked around for a team that got worried when there wasn't a way to find the client files and there weren't any resource phone numbers. And I was always curious about where the money came from. So after a while, it dawned on me that maybe I was born to be an administrator. Yeah, an administrator, I should say, not a minister. That would be something different. So I'm just telling you a little bit about my background. And working with the mentally ill in Seattle years ago, I found that one of the biggest struggles the folks I was working with had was finding housing, maintaining housing, and what the heck to do if they lost their housing. And if you can imagine not having housing for any of us, let alone not having housing when you've got a major psychiatric problem that you're also struggling with. So housing became, I kept running into it. So eventually I kind of just fell, as life does, into running a shelter in downtown Seattle and really specializing in working with people on the streets. Happy to be here. I'm also happy to be up here with Officer Seeley. We've worked well together for a number of years, and we kind of have different roles to play. I look forward to hearing his comments in a bit. And I thought I would go a little bit in depth and for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then open up for some questions. So if you'd be patient enough to kind of jot down your reactions to what I might say or questions you might say. I want to start first with the word homeless. Not the greatest word in the world. I remember when it was a real improvement in trying to describe the people I was working with. because the words being used for the people I was working with were bum, deadbeat, miscreant. Oh, the list goes on and on. I used to actually collect them. I gave up and go up. Street people, that was, I used that one for a long time. So people working with people on the street or people without housing. Eventually homeless became the descriptor of the best political way of discussing, you know, who you're talking about. Because there's so many negatives attached to this group of people. Unfortunately. So homeless was really a great word for a while for those of us in that arena. It gave us some political relief and some compassion maybe to apply to the person we're talking about. Now, of course, you might have noticed that homeless is a pretty negative word, and it's a negative word in Santa Cruz. I mean, it's a really negative word to be homeless in Santa Cruz. Sure. So, well, I think to a lot of people, just sort of the mainstream. Anyway, I'll talk more about that in a minute. But that word, limited though it may be, is in the title of my organization, Homeless Services Center. We're the large point of service, if you will, at Coral Street, 115 Coral Street. And we've done a lot to build up our facilities and improve our facilities in the last few years. And a lot of people in the neighborhoods have contributed to that effort. And we're very much in debt to people for letting us make a lot of improvements. I want to point out our website, which is very easy to find. It just starts with SC for Santa Cruz, and then shelter as the primary service we provide, and then .org. So I didn't bring any newsletters tonight. I brought a few business cards if somebody's really dying to have my business card. But if you just visit our website, you can get every one of our newsletters. You can get my contact information. You can email me at that address just with my first letter, my name, K, and then C-O-L-E, at scshelter.org. So where do I begin? I always try to start first with the humanity of what we're trying to do, because we are talking about human beings. And I had that pretty prominently in my mind about a week ago when I got called out of the restroom because a dead body had been found. And I went just about 25 feet from my office door onto the Caltrans right-of-way outside our sound wall, right there at the corner of Mission and River, and in a little swale of the landscaping, there was a spot, and someone had gotten into a sleeping bag under a bush, and was out of sight to all those thousands of car trips out there going by, morning rush hour. This fellow had died overnight, and his name was David Harris Jones. He happened to be born the same year I was born. When I saw the medical records, that really jumped out to me. You know, same year I was born. Very difficult circumstances. David had a lot of medical problems. He had a substance abuse, major substance abuse problem. He had liver failure. He had diabetes. He had all kinds of physical things going on. But he died in a sleeping bag, in a bush, 20 feet from my office, and was passed by thousands of motorists who didn't even know he was there. So I have to start there because we've got to be concerned about that. You know, that should not be commonplace. Personally, I think that should have been on the front page of the Sentinel. I don't know where it ended up. But it's way too commonplace that people die on the streets. And they die pretty fast. My relative, when we collect names for the homeless memorial that we do every year, we read the names of the people that we know who have been homeless, who have died. And they don't all die in the streets. Some die in dignity. Some die in housing. Some die in a hospice. Some die in a hospital. But way too many die homeless and from a variety of causes. But the thing that always hits people when they hear the reading of the names at our memorial service is the age. The age. People wear out. without housing. So just try to put that out there and say, you know, there's a lot of things about our society. Like, for example, in Santa Cruz, a lot of people are very upset about what's happening in Iraq and the waste of resources, the waste of lives. And I absolutely agree with that. But I'd also like to see not have people dying on the streets be less important as people dying in Iraq. I mean, that's, both things to me are pretty equal.
Some are vets.
And some are vets, yeah. So so what are we trying to do? We're a nonprofit that actually we were two nonprofits at one time, and one of the nonprofits grew up out of the church community doing sheltering people in churches, and the other nonprofit grew up out of kind of social work model. They did the community resource center at Coral Street. Eventually, about 8 years ago, we put the two corporations together to save money and be more efficient in our services. And we have a really, really good nonprofit group that's dedicated to providing emergency services, but also trying to provide some ways out, you know, some hope, some transition points, some ways to get off the streets. And we don't have enough services. And the funny thing, and you might have this question for me later, is there's a perception in Santa Cruz that we are a service-rich community for the homeless. You know, we've got all these shelters, all these services. And I've got to tell you, the reality is we have a paucity. We have a lack. I'd hate to even call it a system. You know, it's a patchwork. If it's any kind of system, it's patchwork as patchwork can be. And we have a lot of things to be proud of, but we don't have a comprehensive system for emergency shelter system. Robert and other advocates, you know, beat me over the head regularly with rhetoric about the fact that we don't have enough shelter, and we don't. You know, the estimates are reliable estimates on any given night in the Santa Cruz County. There could be as many as 3,200 people in need of emergency shelter. And then there's some incredibly low number of shelter beds, and I define that a little bit differently than other people would define what's really available to people off the street. But I just tell you, there's a disparity. There's a huge disparity between supply and demand. So what happens when you don't have enough supply? People, sociologists will tell you, people opt out of your system. So I use the analogy of a movie ticket line. So you want to see that first run movie, and you want to be in that first showing, that first run movie, and you go running down the movie theater and you see this huge line. What do? You go up to the bucks office, and you go around the corner, and you figure out, you know, the time and showing, and you figure out your chances. And that's what people do in the homeless services. They don't come and ask me, is there shelter tonight for me? They just scope out supply and demand. And so what is the largest... Where is the largest provider of emergency shelter in Santa Cruz County? It's our green belts. It's your neighborhood. It's somebody's backyard. That's where people are. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying a lot, but that's where it is. That's where people end up. They end up in, for the most part, end up in abandoned autos, broken down campers, sleeping behind dumpsters, sleeping in green belts, sleeping under bushes, and occasionally getting in and out of the shelter system. And I had a fellow that I worked successfully with a ways back who had camped for 13 years at a spot an hour's hike through the Poganet. And he cold camped, he packed his trash, he had a high need for privacy. And about 13 years, he was working at UCSC as a janitor, part-time. And he could never get on full-time as a janitor at UCSC. And he finally gave up, got kind of worn out, and he moved into our transitional housing, the Page Smith Community House. And I tell you, the first 6 months, he just had to go through a decompression to even figure out how to live with four roommates after 13 years in the bush. You know, so I think it's hard to grasp it sometimes, but on other hands, it's very, very easy to think about it. If you are without housing and you don't have family, or you've lost touch with your family, or things, you know, there's blocks, you make adjustments. You find a niche. You figure out a way to survive. But there can be some pretty profound psychological changes, sociological changes, that if you want to reverse the process, your luck changes, you see some hope, and you're trying to get back on your feet. It's not just a light switch. It's a process. And we need to have ways off the street. So anyway, so I really have to kind of beat that drum, because in Santa Cruz, conventional wisdom in the neighborhoods, is in the police department, at City Hall, is that we've got just this great service system. And so I got to really beat that drum that it ain't so great. It's something, you know, we've invested in it. It gets some people off the street. And we have a pretty good success rate in getting people out of homelessness. But we're in this really terrific disparity. The other thing that you'll ask me about is the conventional wisdom that we are a magnet to the homeless. We are a mecca. I used to collect terms like that, too. Seattle thought they were the mecca, and Portland thought it was the mecca. San Francisco, you know, I'm going like, wait a minute, mecca? You know, there's only one mecca here, so, like, we've got to figure this out. So cities are, what are cities? Cities are focal points. Cities are where we concentrate our services. We have our courts. We have our jails. We have medical care. And the other big thing we have in Santa Cruz is we have a university, a major university. And every year we get an influx of students. And that creates an environment where, if I just put it this way, if I was down and out and on the streets, I would not be in Carmel standing on a street corner. I'd be in Santa Cruz. I would not be in Santa Cruz because there's the Homeless Services Center and I can stand in line and get a meal. Or if I'm lucky, get a mat at a church. I wouldn't be in Santa Cruz for that reason. I would be because I'd feel more comfortable in the environment, maybe a feeling that I'm not going to stick out like a sore thumb, and maybe my luck will change. So there's sort of this conventional wisdom thing that really can work in the opposite direction. It's a parochial vision that says, wait a minute, these folks don't belong here. They should be somewhere else. And that's a tough one. It's a tough one because some of the folks that we work with are definitely from somewhere else. But I go back to, where was I from? Where was my wife from? Where were we 10 years ago? We weren't in San Francisco. So anyway, there's a lot of rich material there. But just to recap a little bit on the service side of what we do at 115 Coral Street is that we are a focal point for services. So you're going to see a lot of people coming and going from our location. And just the coming and going bothers some people. Some people get upset just seeing shopping carts, people going in and out of our location. But it's one of our purposes, is to be a central place to go. So what do we have there? We have a day center, which is what we call an open door program. And we need to have an open door where people can literally be sent by a church. You know, show up at a church asking for help. The church can say, go to 115 Coral Street. A person could be panhandling on Pacific Avenue and an officer approaches them about the rules on Pacific Avenue. And the person says, look, I'm just hungry. The officer can say, go to 115 Coral Street at 4 o'clock. They serve a hot meal. So we are a focal point. We get a lot of traffic because of that. So we have a day center. We have a meal program that does breakfast and dinner. We have a hygiene center. We have storage lockers. We have a mail program. If you're without housing, you don't have an address. Wouldn't it be nice to have an address without having to pay for an address? To be able to get a letter from home, to be able to get a social security check or something that belongs to you. So we have a very large mail service. So the day center and a few counselors, a very small number of counselors, were available to help people problem solve problems as difficult as heroin dependence, to mental health issues, to where do I find work, on up to housing. So we have not a lot of social work component there. Right at the day center is also the Homeless Persons Health Project. The Homeless Persons Health Project is part of the health department. And they have an incredible group of nurses, doctors, social workers. That's a very relatively rich service that we've got in our community, a pretty good health component, pretty holistic. And that's a plus because they actually define a lack of housing as a healthcare problem. So they actually help some of our clients who are physically ill figure out how to get housing, because you can't get healthy if you're living under a bush. You can get healthy, but it's extremely difficult. So the health clinic is a real plus. And when we built the new family shelter building a few years ago, we also built 5,000 square feet of clinic space. Because the clinic used to be in this little bitty bungalow that used to be there. And they had no clinic. They were a clinic without a clinic because they didn't have space for the clinic. They used to do wound care in the kitchen of the house. I mean, it was pretty absurd. So now we've got a real clinic at that location with exam rooms, and we've got doctor time and nurse practitioner time, and we can get people stabilized faster and to other forms of healthcare if they need it. The healthcare linkage is pretty good. Family shelter I mentioned we built just a few years ago. It's a new resource. We can house up to 28 families for up to 6 months, and we're seeing some very good results with families. Because families are typically highly motivated to secure housing. And most of the families, because they care about their kids, that's what a family is. So most of the families we're working with, even before they get into our shelter, they've already signed up for, they're already out looking for housing. They're already out looking for higher level of income through employment. And they can have complicating conditions like substance abuse or other domestic violence, other issues that are complicating the family picture. But we're actually seeing about 80% of our families in a relatively short period of time, 3 to 4 months, stabilize their family, figure out a housing option that works, and get out of the shelter. And that's the other conventional wisdom. The thing about perception of shelter is that people like get stuck in shelters. You know, people don't want to live in a shelter. People want to have their own place to live. Now, people get stuck in shelters, but they only get stuck in shelters because they choose to live in a shelter. Yeah. Even a nice-looking shelter is still a shelter. It's a program. It's not a normal way to live. So, we have the family shelter, and then kind of working around the campus, there's the River Street Shelter, which is a shelter for 40 single-family women. It's run by a mental health agency here in town. It was the first shelter at 115 Corals, actually River Street Shelter. A lot of people on the street call that whole little corner River Street, or they'll call it a lot, or they'll call it the shelter. It's kind of generic terms. And then outside of River Street, and we have the Page Smith Community House, which I mentioned, which is our transitional house. That's for single men and women. We can house up to 40 single men and women. They can stay for up to 18 months, and they pay what's basically a rent, 30% of their income. The program, they come in at zero income, but they have to have a prospect very quickly of having some kind of income, either through general assistance or Social Security or work. And 30% helps pay the program costs. And it also mirrors the real world where people eventually are going to be paying rent. There's not very many opportunities to live free in housing. So that's sort of going around the campus there. And I emphasize the word campus because 8 years ago when I started there, it was a hodgepodge of building lots and houses and the big long day center building, and it was, people would wander around looking for services. So when we brought the family shelter to that site, we redesigned the whole site. And it's pretty unique. A lot of people who come and visit and see what all we have, even people pretty knowledgeable in services, say, well, this is pretty cool. This is pretty unique. This is well thought out. I think that does reflect Santa Cruz. I mean, I think that Santa Cruz does some things uniquely. But don't let it kind of fool you into thinking that we've got this incredible system for the homeless, because we really don't. We've just got barely enough to get started. So that's a big frustration. Now, the other thing about our local situation, and I think Eric and others from the police department view this pretty typically, is sometimes we have more problems than the city of Santa Cruz because we are the county seat. And county seats have jails that relate to the whole county, and they have courts that relate to the whole county. And there's some courts and jail services, I understand, are more announced in Watsonville than used to be. Some of that activity is spreading out countywide. But we're still the county seat. So we're going to have a disproportionate share of people in trouble, people on the fringes of society, people who might be dangerous. You know, it's going to happen. And we have to be realistic about that. Particularly, and I didn't say that the biggest commonality I want to hit on is that people as much or greater need for security and safety than we all with housing do. We have a lot sitting in a house, you know, than if I was trying to get in a car or a bush. So people without housing, they become victims. They are sometimes victimized by the very people they're sharing a campsite with. Just like we might be victimized by a neighbor or a family member in our own house, you know. So there's some of that going on. But people need safety, and it's hard to stay safe. When you're out, I can't overemphasize that need for safety. So there's a lot of it's a strange word to use in Santa Cruz, but there's a lot of conservative thinking in the homeless population. I mean, just because people are down and out doesn't mean they're necessarily, you know, advocating for a social system of total justice. I mean, there's plenty of conservative people who end up homeless. There's people of all kinds. So that's kind of I didn't get much into causes, but I'll just go over those just really quickly. That our society, we pride ourselves, we've built a society based on individual rights and individual, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and, you know, success, and that's what makes America great. But there's a little problem with that, because what if you're able? You know, what if you're not successful? What do you do then? And so we've got this individual success model, and we don't, you know, like to feel responsible for other people. So this individual model here is played out. It's like a stage. People play out their psychodramas in the drama of their life on a stage. But what's the backdrop? Well, the backdrop is all the societal forces that make it a difficult drama for the individual. And those societal forces are pretty clear. The biggest one is housing, and the cost of housing, the availability of housing. I mean, you've got people, you know, when we're worried about police officers and teachers and doctors having affordable housing. I mean, I've actually had people tell me they're worried about how expensive it is for the doctor to have a house. Isn't that incredible? We're worried about that. So the cost of housing is, you know, a huge backdrop for anybody. And I'm always amazed by the people I've worked with and how creative they are, how willing they are to find a niche and figure out some angle on the local housing market. So you've got the housing as a big backdrop on the stage, you've got employment issues, and tell me that employment issues haven't changed in our lifetime. I mean, when I graduated from high school, it was given, it was pretty much still a given that I'd have one employer, I'd have one career, one employer, and I'd retire with benefits from that employer. Well, in my lifetime, that's totally turned on its head. Now people talk about changing careers every 5 years. Not changing jobs every 5 years, changing careers, whole careers. So how's that for the individual on stage? If, and especially if they've got some chips on their shoulders, some issues that made their adjustment totally difficult. So housing, employment, and then the third backdrop for me is our absolutely insane healthcare system. You've got, you know, mental health issues, you've got substance abuse issues, and if somebody is ready to get off heroin and they're standing with me ready to do it, what are the chances there's going to be a subsidized bed for that person to get into to get the medical care they need to kick heroin or meth or whatever, you know, or alcohol? So the people who actually figure out how to, you know, luck out and figure out how to get off those substances and get through our medical systems and get on their feet, hey, they deserve gold medals in my book.
Yeah.
I'd rather give them a gold medal than the diving expert and all the best coaches and the athletic gifts to begin with. So so that's kind of the causality of it. You know, I know there's lots of other ways of looking at it, and talking a great length with people about it. Probably just wrap up my section of this by saying that, you know, I give out some advice that not everybody subscribes to, but I think that, for example, I get asked a lot about panhandling. I'm not a big fan of panhandling. I sometimes give, of course, in my experience, it's probably a little different experience than most people's. But I do encourage people that to be selective about how you be selective, think about what you're doing, and also be careful, because, you know, the moment you are in a situation of opening up your purse, your wallet, whatever, you know what you're doing. If you're going to give a dollar away, don't put a lot of conditions on the dollar. You know, if you've got a lot of conditions on the dollar, like, I want this to go for food, or I want this to go for housing, or I don't want this to go for drugs, just put the dollar back in your pocket. How the heck are you going to know? You know, if you give it, if you want to give, and sometimes I think people who panhandle are doing a good public service. They've cut out the middleman. I mean, I'm a panhandler big time. I raise money. You know, I sweat every dollar we raise, and I hustle every month. I'm a panhandler. But so the person on the street actually cuts out the middleman, and you're going to give your dollar directly to them. So I think most people need to just prepare themselves for that. I mean, I'm trying to teach my kids about it, like how to figure that out. And, of course, I was driving by somebody panhandling me out in front of the clock tower the other day, and my 10-year-old wanted me to roll down the window, and I said, why do you want me to roll down the window? And she said, I want to yell at that guy to stop smoking. Because he was smoking as he was panhandling. And she got the smoking message, you know, that smoking message. They drilled into those kids. But I think that, again, that, you know, like, for example, if somebody's standing in a dangerous location, I hate to see people give to panhandlers on meetings. It drives me crazy. It's dangerous. It slows down traffic. And the person is liable to get a serious ticket, right? I mean, and I see people who end up with several of these tickets. They end up in front of a judge on a bench warrant or whatever. And they got a big problem. So anyway, that's kind of my spiel.
And you've been listening to Executive Director of the Homeless Resource Center, Ken Cole, actually the Homeless Services Center. That's the place out at 115 Coral Street that has emergency shelter for less than 10% of the homeless people. Pretty wretched emergency shelter at that. And is also, during the day, you're not allowed to stay around there unless you're engaged in a specific activity, such as doing some business of some kind with the shelter. The so-called campus, as he calls it, is closed to loiterers. But it is indeed the pretext and the fig leaf that police, merchants, the entire community, well, not the entire community, but a substantial part of the community, believes is the, you know, the answer to homeless problems, at least in terms of what ordinary folks should do. You don't give money to a homeless person. You go and give it to Ken Cole at the Homeless Resource Center, and it will tinkle down to the homeless somehow. And there are services there that he does provide. Of course, homeless people who have been banned from his center, such as Craig Canada, who's spoken on the air. He's the fellow concerned with medical marijuana. We'll actually probably hear an interview from him later. And even those who use the center occasionally have a somewhat different view of the Homeless Services Center. And indeed, the Homeless Services Center was created, its precursor actually, the Homeless Community Resource Center, the Free Meal, the Page Smith Community House, as, well, they were attempts to get the homeless out of the downtown area. And primarily, they were sort of a merchant, conservative-backed effort to remove the homeless so they stay out of the way of the businesses and the tourists. There's no real attempt to provide meaningful emergency shelter for even a majority of homeless people. Instead, the city relies on the so-called sleeping ban camping ordinance, throwing $700,000 not at a couple of campgrounds, but at the Parks and Rec to expand their police force. And the one problem, well, I have a number of problems, but one of the problems I have with Mr. Cole's presentation, which is actually quite enlightening, quite educational. And by the way, for those of you just tuned in, this is Free Radio, 101.1 FM, Freak Radio, and you're tuned to Robert Norris's Bathrob Spears Broadside Show. I am, in fact, Robert Norris. If you want to call in at any point, you can at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. I had been expecting a call from Becky Johnson to talk about Chris Brozda. Perhaps she will call in soon. Perhaps not. We'll see what happens with that. And she may also have some commentary on the Homeless Service Center. She's been a pretty actively involved person for over a decade on this issue. In fact, she was on the precursor to the Homeless Service Center, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, on their board of directors at one point. I think what he has to say, a lot of what he has to say is accurate. Unfortunately, it's what he doesn't say and the kind of slant that is. There's some things that are omitted. Like, it's nice that he recognizes we're all panhandlers, or he's a panhandler as well as the person on the streets, and panhandling cuts out the middleman or the entrepreneur or the bureaucracy between, you know, the people who get jobs essentially by poverty pimping. But the problem is that, you know, he doesn't talk about the actual situation for panhandlers in Santa Cruz and how extreme and draconian the laws are. He doesn't want to offend his board of directors, I would imagine, or perhaps he thinks it's okay. I was interested to learn that he actually lives on the east side and is raising two children. All the conversations we've had, and we've had dozens, he's never bothered to mention his personal life. And indeed, afterward, when I went to talk to him and asked him why he hadn't gotten back to me on a couple of questions, he turned and looked at me and said, "I don't have to." Which is a candid answer, of course. You know, nobody has to get back to you. It's a choice they make. But it also shows a certain cast of mind. It shows a certain preference. And it pisses me off as well, I might add, but that's another matter. We have a caller. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Robert Alone.
Hey, Robert and Robert Alone.
Hi, Becky.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson.
Yeah, welcome to Free Radio. I was just dropping your name. So
I heard a little bit of Ken Cole's.
Yeah, you had listened to some of this, huh?
Talk, and you know, I think he did a pretty good job of sketching out how difficult it is for people who are homeless to try to do all the things that we want them to do, which is get jobs and take care of their children and get back into housing and become productive parts of our society. And how challenged that is and how limited the resources are really for that and how hard so many people are on homeless people. I mean, treating them as though they're the scum of the earth and, you know, worthy of anything vile that happens to them. I thought he did a good job to dispel some of that. I was a little uncomfortable with his rant about panhandlers and how he doesn't like panhandlers and all the different things about that. And
well, the reason it's interesting, we distributed some literature to the Santa Cruz neighbors, the audience he was addressing in the community room of the police station two nights ago when he actually gave this speech. And the three things we distributed were a Los Angeles guide to why panhandling is essentially an essential activity for poor people and how to do it. And you've seen that.
Yeah, that came out like 10 years ago, and it's still relevant.
Yeah, the L.A. Coalition put that one out. Then there's that one that you wrote yourself, an article for, I guess it was an editorial for The Sentinel, which talked about, well, they labeled it, let the spare change flow freely to the panhandlers, which I don't think your choice.
No, that wasn't exactly what I was, a title I would have chosen for that.
But there's been this constant, attempt, and it's perhaps, traditional and age-old, of merchants to, get people, they figure they can get rid of panhandlers by just persuading everybody to donate money to social service organizations and give panhandlers little cards. Apparently these spare change, or real change, not spare change program, which involves if a panhandler asks you for money, you don't give them money, you give them a card that says, here are the services, go to the services. That's been reinstituted in San Francisco, I'm being told, though I haven't checked it directly.
It just comes around in a cycle. I guess they just have to go long enough that people have amnesia over how stupid it was.
Well,
and then it comes back up. Let's do this again.
It's just that the services don't exist, and the implication that they do is so full of, it's so mendacious. It's sort of a straight lie. It's like talking about weapons of mass destruction that don't exist. And, it's a way of, I guess for people like the Santa Cruz neighbors who have been, who are essentially part of a sort of a police conservative neighborhood network that I see one of their main objectives is, making neighborhoods very inhospitable to homeless people, closing the parks down to people who are poor, driving them away with no smoking legislation, driving them away by giving the park director the power to close the parks at different times when she wants, no parking permit required to park your vehicle, and no parking allowed at night, specifically directed against, quote, campers in their vehicles, the downtown parking trespass law and the parking garages. Now, I don't have, specific documentation that the Santa Cruz neighbors supported every one of these efforts. But it's just, frankly, it's my impression that I've never heard them deny it. And the kind of people they invite there, I asked to be invited to this meeting because I thought, or have some homeless advocates speak. Never got a reply back from Deborah Alston.
Ah, so you didn't get the huff 3 to 6 minutes on their agenda.
We didn't get any time. In fact, when I tried to ask a question, the officer Seeley refused to answer my question and kept avoiding me. And you'll perhaps hear this later when I play that tape. And Ken Cole briefly answered a question. And then when I tried to extend it, everyone jumped in and tried to tell me to shut up. And I said, no, I want to finish my question. And I was able to do that. I may be able to find that on the tape as well.
Ah, well, more things we have to look forward to. Lucky us.
I mean, the point was to have people who were homeless talk at this meeting and also to have the neighbors see this. But I kind of agree with you. I think Cole said a lot of interesting things to people who were even more conservative than he is. But you may remember what the problems that Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, had with Cole way back when he was vice chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force. That, Chief Belcher was admitting that, people outside were getting violently assaulted at a 4 to 10 times greater rate.
Yeah, we did get some really good data on that as a result of the Homeless Issues Task Force. So.
Right, but when Belcher started holding up on the data and we asked Ken Cole to try to get it for us, and he told us he would, he became very, angry and recalcitrant. We reminded him of his promise. And since that time, at least more or less, he has been, he only responds and almost with what seems to be an insincere smile when we talk briefly in public. Although I do know that occasionally, even he finds his gorge rise when someone like Porter at city council comes up.
Oh, with, that was choice.
Comes up with commentary that, oh, homeless people, all they need to do is go get their tickets dismissed. And we've got figures that the armory is never full anyway. Uh-huh. And therefore, by inference, there's no problem. Cole got up and didn't directly challenge that, but he kind of...
He didn't mention Porter or the incident, but I felt it was in directly in response to what Porter had done.
He did say that. Well, it was more one of these. It's sad to be homeless, and it, you know, you have to make a decision whether you're going to go camp out or go into a wretched shelter situation. But he didn't say the law is completely inadequate and abusive.
But what he did say it is said that it's completely wrong to base whether you're going to dismiss a camping ticket based on whether the armory is full or not. He said that was a false standard.
Yeah, but I don't think he made it very clear why. That's one of the problems. He didn't point out that, you know, there's a huge number of homeless people who cannot use the armory on any particular night, regardless of what the figures say.
Well, he said that there are people that would have decided the day before or even weeks before that that option wasn't going to work for them,
right,
for one reason or another.
Right, but that makes it appear that they were homeless by choice. They made that choice. But and he did also say, we're talking...
Well, he said they didn't have any good choices.
We're talking about a council meeting that happened about, a month and a half, 2 months ago. And he did say that if everybody showed up at once, he wouldn't know what to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, if people showed up for shelter. But he did not directly say, you know, let's be honest, City Council, there is inadequate shelter, and therefore the law actually makes people criminals who don't have a shelter option.
He did say that there's inadequate shelter.
But
he said he was thankful for the people who camped out, because if they all showed up at his door, that the program would just be overwhelmed.
That's correct, but he did not in any way challenge the law that these city council members continue to justify.
He challenged the basis on which the enforcement is occurring, you know, the logical basis for the enforcement. And I think that's pretty good for a service provider who, you know, gets city funding. They're not exactly the most outspoken group
He doesn't get that much city funding. He doesn't get that much city funding. I don't think most of his funding comes from the city. And he's been in this tenured position for years. And frankly, until he draws the lines and makes it clear, I think he is misleading people. And he's not using his experience. I mean, people can look at Ken Cole and say, well, why doesn't he say something about it if it's such a bad idea? I've never heard him say it's unconscionable, impractical, and false to, you know, fine people for sleeping given the shelter situation we have. It just doesn't work. He says nothing of the kind, and frankly, I don't think he ever will. Maybe so, but I haven't heard it yet.
I haven't heard him say those exact words, but he's gone more further out than more service providers, other past service providers have done, I believe.
I tend
to give them a little more credit than you do.
Seems like it. Well, I know you called in for another purpose. I know you had an individual who's even more outrageous than either you or I have been on this issue. Some may consider you more conservative than I am.
I just wanted to note the...
But this man who you're about to talk about...
one-year anniversary...
Yeah,
this
guy is more radical than I am by a long shot, or was while he was alive.
Our passed on kindred spirit, Chris Brozda, who ended his life a year ago today. And, you know, he was 49 years old, and he was highly educated, talented, but suffered from severe manic depression. And because of his illness, he was forced to drop out of college. And then after that, he became homeless. And he was living in his van. And the Santa Cruz police seized his van as an accessory to the crime of camping. He had many, many altercations and experiences with the police and the mental health unit at Dominican Hospital. And he complained of being forced to take huge doses of psychiatric medications from which he suffered dreadful side effects. He did agree to take some of them. Some of them he felt helped his condition, but he felt that he was over medicated and against his, you know, beyond what he would choose to take himself. And Chris really was so opposed to the Santa Cruz sleeping ban. He was very adamant that the activists and lawyers and homeless people should unite their efforts and energies and launch a civil suit against the sleeping ban. He thought it should be based on the detrimental impact to the health and well-being of homeless people, which surely could be documented. It could be documented in the death toll, right? With homeless people dying on an average of 20 years before what their life expectancy would be. And one time at City Council during public comment, I remember Cynthia Matthews was serving her first term as mayor, and Chris was speaking, and council member Mike Rotkin walked out right as Chris Brozda was speaking out against the sleeping ban. And because of, as soon as Mike Rotkin left the room, there was a lack of a quorum. And Brozda, Matthews, unlike Rotkin, when Fitzmaurice led a little group out with your Swami, why Swami thing, Robert. But Matthews, saying as soon as Rotkin left the room, she said, oh, there's no quorum. She forced Chris to stop speaking, and this completely upset him. He felt so ignored and dissed and basically as though, you know, this vital issue that he was bringing to them was being snubbed, just blatantly snubbed in his face. And he was so upset that he confronted Michael Hernandez about the lack of civil rights for homeless people, and Hernandez responded by having him arrested. Let's see, Chris worked with Food Not Bombs for a long time, and then, of course, went into some sort of endless arguments or something with disputes with some of the Food Not Bombers, which I wasn't really privy to that. One of the things Chris was passionate about publicizing was the lesser-known Serbian genocide of 1915 to 1923. This is where 1.5 million Serbs or Armenians were massacred by the Turks in the Ottoman Empire. And Adolf Hitler used the lack of opposition by the international community as encouragement for him to proceed with his efforts to genocide the Jews. And Chris just was amazed that nobody had ever heard of this Serbian genocide. What it meant to the Serbs and what it meant for the history of humans in the last 100 years or so. He wrote extensively. He was one of the early bloggers. Really, he was blogging before the word blog was even around. He kept putting all kinds of documents and up a huge website, which sadly disappeared shortly after his death. I don't know who made that decision to pull the plug on it, but I really wish they had.
Well, I imagine his parents did. They didn't think much of his homeless civil rights activities, and indeed, you didn't mention he died by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge a year ago, rather dramatic suicide. But in spite of that, he was never mentioned in the roster of names that Ken Cole read last year at the Homeless Service Center. And Brozda was an angry man. He was also, I guess some called him manic depressive, some called him bipolar. Some said, why are you interrupting this meeting with your tirades? And he did interrupt meetings at different times. Mm-hmm. However, if you look at his actual positions, he was often way ahead of people, including myself, on what the authorities were likely to do and how senseless it was to engage in temporizing and negotiating with them over points that they would not proceed on. So, for instance, when the Kennedy and Rotkin were pretending to negotiate with the campers who were camped and the only open-air shelter that Santa Cruz has ever had for any length of time, the Coral Street Open-Air Shelter, a campground mm-hmm. in 1995 in the fall mm-hmm. there, right, which is now where Page Smith Community House stands at the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 9. You may remember Brozda was angrily suspicious of Daryl Darling of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, on which you sat on the board of directors at that time, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was suspicious of Kennedy, was on the city council, and Rotkin, who was mayor at the time. He was just about to become mayor in November of 95. And what happened was the Citizens Committee for the Homeless made a deal that they would let the campers stay where they were and give them a 10-day notice before moving on them. Then they broke their word when there was a torrential rain, and Rotkin and Kennedy moved in with threats and moved out the campers, giving some of them tickets to New Brighton Beach and dispersing the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Activist Dan Hopkins later blamed Kennedy and Rotkin for killing campers, in essence, indirectly, through this dispersal. And Brozda sort of predicted this. He saw it all coming, and he was angry about it, and he wanted to hold people accountable for it. And that, of course, put him really in really direct, unpleasant opposition. I found it uncomfortable being around him on these occasions, too, with authority figures who, you know, we were supposed to be nice to, as they took away homeless people's rights and ultimately ended homeless people's lives, some of them. Your thoughts?
Chris went through so many different periods in his life with different passions he was into and things he was very, very interested in and researched heavily. But remember he did all that yoga, and he went from being a person who was basically a very large, portly size to being a very lithe and flexible. I mean, his body completely changed with the...
Well, actually, Chris was a very portly guy throughout, and he'd been interested in yoga for 15 years, the entire, 16 or 17 years that I knew him. He was actually a part of the original town clock peace vigil during the first Iraqi war, the first Persian Gulf War,
mm-hmm.
when Wonton Dave and Robert
Robert Flory were there. Overweight guy.
His unconventional approach in terms of his yoga activities, he would sit on the floor, and he would do this, and he would come to a Huff meeting when we were holding Huff meetings in the county building basement, where we still are holding Huff meetings, but we had to move upstairs if we wanted to include Chris, because the management was getting freaked out by his sitting on the floor and being barefoot in a cafe. And
yeah, he was always doing these things that would unnerve people. Just kind of the way he moved around.
And that, I think, you know, mixed with his antagonistic attitude, made it difficult to difficult for me. But I did want to give him credit. Now you wanted to say something about him.
Well, you know, it's the nature of manic depression that they can get these triggers that set off all this, a flood of hormones or whatever.
I don't know.
Adrenaline,
maybe. I know. I'm glad that we remember him.
That they can go into these rages that are really, you know, it's much more difficult for them to contain their emotions than people who don't have that.
I don't know.
A disease, by the way, that there's no cure for. There are treatments, but there's no cure for it.
Well, it's certainly made worse if you're angry at injustice, and it's too bad you're dismissed as being crazy under those circumstances. Anyway,
well, yeah, it could be a real issue.
I appreciate
issue.
Your calling, Becky. I'm going to roll. I'm going to kind of roll this up because I want to get moving into the next segment here, so to speak.
Well, but you can roll it up at the end of my sentence rather than the middle of it.
It's more fun to do it in the middle. But go ahead. Why don't you make it the end of your paragraph? We'll give you another 30 seconds here.
Oh, be big now.
In the spirit
your
of
your audience is not fooled.
Mm-hmm.
I just found Chris to be a force to be dealt with. Sometimes I didn't want to deal with him because he sort of penetrated beyond my comfort zone. And yet I'm finding here a year later, you know, there's a big hole where he used to be.
I haven't noticed that, but that may be because I feel like I'm big enough to fill the plug, but we'll see about that.
Well, I'm sure you feel that way.
No, I don't think anybody can replace Brozda, and I don't know if anybody would want to, but If people are more interested, they want to find out more about what he's written, although his huge website is gone. Huff Literature sometimes mentioned him and talked about his adventures. If you Google for Brozda, Brozda, Chris Brozda, who I sometimes call Chris Brozda, you can find more information. And Becky, thank you for your update on that.
Okay, great. And thanks for keeping all this information coming for all of us.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. And what have I here? Well, I think I'm going to be reduced to doing some more street interview playing for the moment. But hey, that's not so bad. I think it's of interest, so I'm going to do it, by cracky.
Believing that living is just a hard way.
We've been listening to the singing of...
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. How do you do, oh, dear? Thank you very much.
You.
Seems like there are more homeless folks out. Hey,
yeah.
Weather's gotten more temperate, a lot more instrumentalists on the street. I don't see the Swami in his blanket.
No, this time.
We have an announced riot coming up. Are you one of the infamous rioters?
I am one of the infamous rioters.
And what is your name, rioter? We'll call you Rider 1.
Rider 1.
Now, R1...
you can call me Reptile. I'm Rider 2.
Reptile R2. What's going to be happening? I mean, what's under
we
planning?
We pretty much figure that all it takes is one brick through a window.
And
or someone's head through a window.
Now, the subject of the riot, or should I say the object of the riot, would be...
Riot for peace.
Rioting for peace.
That'd be way rad. I'd be into it, dude.
The peace with justice, or just the peace of the graveyard? What are we looking for here?
This is more like peace of mind. Riot for peace. Job well done. We're just looking for people, you know, fine candidates who'd like to be contribute to our riot Friday afternoon.
Now, how can people be a part of this riot?
Come downtown, bring bricks, Molotov cocktails, whatever you want to throw at the police.
Now, do you have an assembly point for this particular riot?
In front of the Gap, preferably.
Is it directed against the Gap?
No, we like the Gap. I got some Gap on right now.
It just seems like a good place to start.
Everyone knows where it's at. You know?
Exactly.
Now, who will, in fact, be the subject of the riot? Who's going to be subjected to the force, the vitriol, the anger, the crashy, smashy of the riot?
We haven't decided if we're going to break anything. We were thinking about maybe bringing our own stuff to break, like smash some computers, smash some television.
Riot against each other, so to speak.
No. There's no violence. Just violence against things.
Rage against the machine. Rage
exactly. It sounds good to me.
Now, are the police going to leave this? Are they going to over? You have a.
I think that once we start our riot, the police they'll want to be involved.
I see.
You know, they're going to want to be there.
Okay. Well, again, what time will this be on Friday?
4 o'clock Friday.
4 o'clock
Friday the 9th of March.
4 o'clock Friday the 9th.
Thank you very much. And we've been talking with R1
and Reptile.
And thank you, Reptile.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Have a good one.
All right.
Now, I don't have the update on the March 9th riot. If anybody does, let me know.
We're just climbing into a white van for those who wish to arrest them later. yes, try to help all sides out here on beautiful Pacific Avenue. Well, here we are talking with
Sean
and
Jacob
and
James.
Now, you guys are here in the kind of the breezeway next to.
Gelatomania.
And what's been happening? You know, have you? Sometimes people who are musicians are hassled for being in this area. Have you guys been hassled? Or?
Not tonight. In fact, I've almost never been hassled, strangely enough. I don't know if it's a genre of music that I play.
And you have kind of a keyboard here?
It's a harmonium, and we do a Sanskrit chanting, something similar to what the Hare Krishnas would do, but it's more... non-denominational, shall we say. But it's, I think, because of the nature of the music, it's kind of meditation-type music. It doesn't seem to create as much of a ruckus or as much of a complaint, I guess. I've played it for years and haven't really had too much of a problem. But I've seen a lot of great musicians get hassled. So.
How long have you been doing it here in Santa Cruz?
On and off for several years at a time. Then I haven't actually done this in... probably like 4 years. Before that, I had done it for a couple of years.
Now, you look familiar. Have you been doing this downtown much or not?
Exactly. Downtown a couple times. Last year I used to play more and on the east side more, Capitola.
So last week, this is your first time out tonight?
Last week, yeah. Last week. Definitely.
Have you been keeping an eye on the street at all, or have you been pretty much indoors as far as, I mean, have you been observing? There's been, of course, a police crackdown in the last month, mm-hmm. and I recently, in the last couple of days, there hasn't been a lot of arrests brought to my attention, but there seems to be a presence of police, at least reported, though I haven't seen too many cars tonight. What's your perception?
I have saw one or two on the way over, but I can't tell. There always seems like there's a lot of police out there. So.
It seems like there's always a lot of cops that are just looking for something to do.
Yeah.
Police obviously bigoted people who don't like our police force. And what is this instrument you're playing here?
These are the tabla. These are Indian drum. And I think they're originally, I think what came first was the pakawaj or the mudango. Yeah, pakawaj, and then they kind of split off from that and created the tabla, which is probably one of the most popular Indian drums now used in music.
And you're indoors yourself. You're not camping out.
I've been living out of my bus for about 4 years.
And you haven't been ticketed or hassled, or have you?
If I'm not careful, I get hassled a lot, yeah.
Has there been an upsurge in this recently among either from to you or from... to people that you know, have you noticed any change in the police policies in the last couple of weeks toward people in vehicles?
I haven't really, witnessed a lot. I've just kind of felt it on an energetic level, actually. I feel like I'm definitely ready to find a room and call it quits, living out of the bus, yeah, because it's getting time.
So the police are going to make you take some action to pull your life together. Is that what's going on?
I don't know, man.
Give the landlord a little more of his just due, a little more money, right?
Yeah, they really want to. I don't know. We don't want to have too many people going out of the on different paths. You know, we want to be able to keep them walking.
There is the corporate way, the army way, my way, and their way, and the highway. I mean, they're all these different.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been talking with
Jacob
and
Sean,
and saying very little is James. Thank you very much. Here's a man near the bookshop Santa Cruz. And what's your name, sir?
My name's Jeff Palmer.
Jeff, what do you... Well, go ahead, give us a tune.
I'm kind of making something up here, so you have to bear with me.
This is, of course, a blocked-off area. It used to be a passageway through for the Asian Rose, but now it's the Pacific Garden Place, 58 luxury condominiums. Just what Santa Cruz needs. No trespassing. Violators will be prosecuted. We're talking here, a free radio interview quickly with you guys
Yeah.
We're talking with...
Rochelle.
And...
Justin.
And...
Damien.
That's it. Young child and all bundled up in a baby carriage. So you two are outside or inside? So you got a backpack and a drum and you got a guitar in your back.
We're outside.
No, and how long you been outside?
For about a minute, probably my whole life. I don't know. Yeah.
And in Santa Cruz?
No, all over the place.
And in Santa Cruz, how long have you been here?
4 months.
And any hassles from police for during that time?
Not recently, no.
That's good. Is that because of your own, should we say, lack of obviousness? Is it because you kind of keep a low profile?
Yes, yes, for sure.
Or is it because,
That might be that for her. I mean, I've had myself on Front Street a lot of times. I mean, not that Front Street, but like right here on the Avenue, you know. Something just happened one night, dude, and then things changed, and the police kind of looked at me different, you know.
And what happened? Is it talkable or not?
Yeah, of course it is. I found God, dude. So, you know, I know who he is. I know who the rest of them are.
Is God a policeman?
No, he's not.
Are policemen close to God?
No, they're not.
Can policemen find God?
Of course they can.
How can policemen find God?
All they got to do is ask, man. All they got to do is say, hey, man, I accept you into my life, dog. That's it. That's it.
Thank you.
No problem.
And
it's as real as it gets.
Now, have you found God?
I
just found a man who was found.
I may have met him, but I don't know.
So we'll see. If we can find God on the Avenue, perhaps we could have a word with him, and perhaps we will. Thank you for talking with us. We've been talking with
Justin.
And
Rochelle.
Good night. God bless you guys.
A lot of folks downtown with backpacks, I would say more than before, and I don't know why this is. What do you think, Valerie?
Well, Suzanne, who you interviewed earlier, said that she's been seeing a lot of her friends wandering up and down the streets because they've been rousted out of their sleeping areas. And it's possible that a lot of people are just, you know, not knowing where they're going to go tonight because they've been rousted out of their favorite spots.
Well, it could also be that tonight is one of the first warm nights. I mean, there were a couple warm nights a few nights ago.
It's early. It's only 8 o'clock.
Right. We're visiting the infamous Craig Canada in his lair. He's
good-looking
food and a nice-looking computer. But he's also the proud possessor of four, count them, four sleeping band tickets. How's that going, Craig?
Well, I have two coming up on the 20th.
Of March?
Yeah, and I haven't done anything about the other two.
Mm-hmm. The thing to do, of course, is to go down to the basement of the county building, disqualify the referee with a 170.6 CCP statement, meaning you just write a note to the court, to the clerk at the window, saying, I believe the referee, Kim Baskett, to be prejudiced and move my case to be put into another court. And then you then go to that court and you plead not guilty, and and they try you, find you guilty, and away you go.
Yeah.
And often for many people out there, you can get a note from the Homeless Service Center that says that the shelter was full, that there was no shelter that night, particularly for you, since you're a man who uses marijuana as a medication, and that bans you from coming into the armory, right?
Well, yeah, and also I understand they just mentioned at this last city council meeting that the army hasn't been full all winter, but I'm banned anyway, yeah, so...
Right, although that became a point where Ed Porter, the council member, tried to say that the armory hasn't been full. Why are people complaining that there's a problem with shelter? And actually, the head of the shelter service, Ken Cole, stood up and said, well, it actually has been. I mean, it's not full in the most technical sense. We cram people in when it's raining, but in fact, it's not comfortable if there are more than 50 people there, really. And even if there are only 50, you wouldn't want to be there. Most people wouldn't want to be there. You've been to the armory yourself one time,
no,
or not?
Never have. No, but actually, in front of this place last night about this time, there's a guy standing out there, and I sat and watched him ask the policeman what he was supposed to do. He said he went to the armory, and then he told him he had to go pee, and they told him to go out back, and there was razor wire back there, and so he got into argument and got thrown out, and he was wandering around.
The armory told him to go pee in the back on the ground, or I'm sorry.
I don't know. I didn't pay a lot of attention, but he evidently had been thrown out of the armory last night and was wandering around here. He asked a policeman in front of me what he was supposed to do.
What did the policeman say?
He didn't seem to know. I didn't listen. I think they were too busy harassing people.
Now, have you noticed in the last couple of days much police contact with people?
Oh, yeah. The guy sitting right over there in the corner was taken in last night. He was asking people here for something to wear. They had all his stuff, all his clothes and everything.
You know what he was taken in for?
I don't know exactly. He was talking about it last night. But
Yeah. Have you, you're talking about the fellow in the white hat, the cowboy hat?
Yeah.
So anything else you've observed or heard about on the streets in the last few days you want to pass on?
Well, of course, there was last week. There was a guy running, walking around, screaming, angry at the town. I knew just how he felt, but I pretty much kept to myself. All I know is what I've heard in the papers, and I haven't even read all those articles.
Everything I read on the front page of the Sentinel.
I heard they found. I guess they found two people dead recently. Two homeless people dead recently.
One on 7th Avenue.
Yeah.
Maybe another before then. There was a fight, according to yesterday's Sentinel. Likes to, well, the Sentinel, you know, naturally plays up the worst, but they also tend to attach the word homeless often to things very quickly. Anything else you want to add for the listeners out there?
Not that I can think of. No. That's it.
There you have it. Thank you, Craig Kenda.
Yeah.
And Craig attempted to go in to deal with the tickets, but because he carries around a large backpack with him, they wouldn't let him through the metal detector. They wouldn't let him keep his backpack outside. They wouldn't let him send a note into the judge, and he became very angry and left and got a failure to appear, I believe, which he's now going to have to deal with. So his travail continues. I'm going to go back now briefly to the downtown, I should say, Santa Cruz neighbors and their meeting of two nights ago. Here's a question from the audience, from one of the Santa Cruz neighbors to Ken Cole. I'll give you some idea of the kind of audience that was listening and their concerns, lest you think I exaggerate about the depth of the, prejudice, bigotry, gentrified quality, yuppie-ishness of the neighbors. Here's the little more from that session.
Asking the question that's already been covered. But I'm just curious to know what the city's policy is on homelessness in the Green Dot area.
I think Eric can talk to it better than me. It's not legal.
Okay. Because I live near Nirvana Gulch, and we've done two big cleanups there. I don't know if any of my neighbors are here tonight, but we've done two very, very large cleanups. Massive.
Yeah.
None of stuff. They were a bicycle, bicycle. It looked like a stolen bicycle. Assembly plants going on down there, all kinds of stuff. And I feel like after all that effort that I want to keep on top of it.
Sure.
So I made some calls to the city to come out, and one time, it was just 2 weeks ago, I saw two people sleeping on a Saturday morning, and I called the police, and they came out, and I checked in with the officer later. I said, did you cite them? He said, no, they weren't asleep. They weren't actually sleeping at the time. They were awake in their sleeping bags, but they were just waking up when I made the call. So I was like, okay, how does that work?
Well, I'm going to let Eric respond to that in his segment, because now you're getting to the enforcement of the sleep.
Is there any hope of you, I was born and raised here, and lots of, not wealthy, but connections, so I could always find a job. So I can understand if they dropped me in Kansas City tomorrow, I'd have a hard time putting life together at $7 an hour. But I'm kind of a mixed emotions as far as
sure.
But is there anybody that you turn away from your facility that, is everybody accepted, even though, like these encampments, a lot of times they're not safe for the people that stay there because of violence and drugs and the like, but there's anybody that has, been extra pesky downtown or had crime, problems with crime that you don't accept at your shelter?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely limits wherever no matter how open a door you have, there's still limits to what you can do to help people. And some people exceed all limits. Some people's behavior is so out of control that it's unsafe for the other people you're helping.
Yeah.
That you do not. So, yes, we make a lot of behavioral choices, and we have to make some really hard choices because of the philosophy of why we're there is, those choices are sometimes contrary to the philosophy of why we're there. But, yes, I mean, I think it's unrealistic to give people the sense that they have any great entitlement to anything because the society doesn't provide a lot of entitlement.
And here you see Ken Cole kind of dodging the questions, saying that Officer Seeley will answer questions about the sleeping band. Seeley did nothing of the kind. During his presentation, he simply kind of coaxed the audience into a long story, a long discussion of what to do with a woman who had an anger management problem. And he kind of presented it like a little exercise. It's kind of a fill in the blanks. What should happen? What are the positive aspects of this, and what are the negative aspects of this? And he did a little kind of, he drew the audience in a sort of a salesman-like way, but he didn't really give too much substantive information. And I'll be playing a little bit of that in a moment. But first, here's a little more, as we like to switch back and forth. Here's actually something that was happening outside, if I have the right tape here, while this Santa Cruz Neighbors meeting was happening in the police station community room two nights ago. There were some folks who came to report police misconduct as they munched brownies against bigotry in front of the police station, which we were providing. We also provided brownies, by the way, to the Santa Cruz Neighbors inside. Most people were kind of wary of our brownies, but some took them. Mickey Mouse has to be cleared from the studio just a moment. Shindig of the Santa Cruz Neighbors inside. I got a safe performer outside and lots of nice brownies. And we're talking with
Officer Shindig.
And Officer Shindig, and of course you are using a pseudonym to protect your anonymity. Shindig, what... You came to me, you just handed me a list of concerns, actually a description of an incident that happened involving officers Hoppe, Klein, and Lamas. Now, what happened?
Well, I was walking by, and there was four cops pretty much behind like two kids that I know and stuff, and like I was passing them, and like when I got like further down the block, they sat down on the bench, and all of a sudden like I heard like the chick screaming like, "Hey, you know, I was just walking down the street. What are you doing?" And I turned back around, and like a cop was pushing her down on the bench, like handcuffing her. He didn't say anything. I mean, I was like maybe 16 feet away, dude. And he didn't say anything before he did this. They just pushed her down and started saying something about after they said, "We're gonna search your bags," and they're like, no. They're like, "We have to search your bags." They're like, "No." This guy, so they weren't consenting to it, obviously. They were like, "No, don't search my bags," and they started opening up their shit. Well, that was kind of messed up, you know. Like, so like I walked back, like, okay, I'm not gonna tell you what I did before I walked back because I asked to do a pot, which is illegal. But I walked back.
Officer Shindig, how could you?
Exactly. But I walked back, and like she was like, they're all saying, "Oh, whoa, you were accused of selling pot." Like, after she was already handcuffed, like, on the bench and stuff, like, and her boyfriend was over there, like, trying to, like, talk them out of, like, not going through his bank, and then they're all like, "You were accused of selling pot," and she's all like, no, dude, I have way under an eighth, dude, I've got, like, head stash, dude, you can't get me for nothing, I wasn't doing shit. And then, like, everybody else is like, "Wait a minute, isn't marijuana lower priority?" And there was, I mean, I could have sworn I was seeing somebody jaywalking right there, and they didn't give a fuck. They were fucking with
the... Where did this happen, Shindig? Where did this happen?
This happened on Pacific. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was, like, a block down from Borders.
And what time of day was it?
It was, like, midday, like, maybe, like, 3.
And when was it? What day?
What is today?
Today is Tuesday.
And it was Tuesday.
It was today.
Yes, it was today. It was a few hours ago.
And were the officers saying anything to the people involved? Did you hear any conversation?
they were pretty much ignoring everybody who was yelling at them about their civil rights. They were just, like, detaining these kids, and like, they didn't even read them their rights before they shoved her into the car. I mean, they literally shoved her. Dude, some guy was all like, "Hey, you were shoving her," and he's like, "Can you define shoving?" And he's all like, "No, but you were shoving her." And they're like, "Well, then it doesn't matter if you can't define it." So, like,
Which officer said that? A couple of things you should know about. They don't have to read your rights unless they question you. Okay. That's one. Second thing is, Measure K, which makes enforcement of marijuana as the lowest priority, is only in private, indoors, on private property, actually.
Okay.
And so you guys, they were in public. Secondly, it's legal to search someone once you've arrested them. So if they've already been arrested,
That is to say, if they've already been told they're under arrest.
They're allowed to come around them and shove them on the bench and handcuff them before they say anything?
Well, they have to, if they're going to do that.
But it was a girl who almost looks like she's pregnant.
Right. Well, if they did so abusively, that is an inappropriate police practice. The question is, did they have probable cause to arrest her? In other words, did they see her engaging in something like exchange of money, or did
they said that they were told that somebody that they were told
tip.
Yeah. Well, somebody said that they were selling weed.
I see. And, well, the question will come up in court. You know, whether their evidence that evidence could be suppressed and whether they'll get off. They're in jail right now.
I believe so. They detained both of them.
What's the name of the couple? First name.
Hmm?
If you want.
Amy Stamper, she's a cool chick, and she doesn't do nothing to harm nobody. Neither does her boyfriend. I don't remember his name, but like.
How long you been in town yourself?
Huh? I've been coming back and forth for about 2 weeks.
And what's your feeling about Santa Cruz prior to this incident and now?
Now, this is a beautiful city, you know. Like, cats are hella cool to people here, you know. Like, you come into town and people are like, welcome. Like, you want some bread, you know? Like, they're loving people. But, like, most of the cops and stuff, they just mess with all the homeless people, you know? Somebody could be getting raped down the street, you know, but you get messed with playing a drum after 11, you know? I guess that's just the way it's just happening all over the coast.
Anything you want to say out there to the free radio folks?
To the free radio folks?
It's not a test. If you got something,
no,
it's
no.
Fine. Silence.
Take care of your family, dogs.
Thank you.
And just kind of a quick update. In today's paper under Cops and Courts on page A8, the Santa Cruz Urinal, or Sentinel as they call themselves, there's a little story, Transients Resist Arrest Downtown. Two transients encouraged bystanders to attack police officers who were talking to them downtown Tuesday, police reported. Officers approached Amy Stamper, 20, and Stephen Jenkins, 25, on the 1300 block of Pacific Avenue after a report that two people resembling the couple were dealing drugs on the 700 block of Front Street, police said. The couple acted aggressive when police tried to speak to them and were arrested on suspicion of narcotics crimes and resisting arrest, police said. Stamper was also booked into county jail on suspicion of forgery. She had counterfeit bills with her, police said. And I talked again to one of the three, I guess it was the fellow you heard a moment ago. Apparently Amy has been released from jail. I note a couple things. First, you know, I gave him all the kind of the legal folderol, Measure K, the measure that we still haven't got the Oversight Commission for, by the way. Send your applications to the Santa Cruz City Council. But Measure K, which voters passed last November, talks about marijuana use being the lowest priority of police enforcement indoors on private property for those over 21. Now, one of them wasn't over 21. Maybe it's over 18. I think it's over 21. I think you have to be an adult. So Measure K doesn't apply, but should anybody be hassled for this kind of thing? And were they, in fact, even, what's the priority of the police going after young people in this way, for marijuana? Because it says narcotics here instead of marijuana. And I think that people are pretty candid with me on the streets. He might have meant something else. But he said marijuana. But you don't read that in the Sentinel, because marijuana is an herb that people don't really feel should be a police priority, even in public, particularly a lot of us. That it's a waste of money, that it's an abuse of constitutional authority, that creates a paranoid and repressive atmosphere downtown when police go after people for using, smoking, selling, giving marijuana around or away. Now, I guess I'm impressed, frankly, the transients resisted this arrest, that they called out to other people protesting what was happening. And, you know, and technically, they can search you after they've arrested you. And no, they don't have to, it's not the lowest priority if you're outdoors. And no, they don't have to Mirandize you and inform you of your rights unless they're interrogating you. All these are true facts. But the deeper truth is it's important to resist a bogus, repressive, overweening police presence down town. Now, resisting it violently or resisting it in such a manner that the police become justified or feel justified or appear justified in the broader community in using inappropriate force, as apparently the person who I interviewed felt, is not the wisest thing to do. But for some people, it may be the right thing to do. Some people, you know, some people feel their spirit is being crushed and they want to resist it. And, of course, police know that, and so often they provoke that kind of resistance so they can crush you all the more. Not because police are intrinsically evil as human beings, no, but because the kind of system that they use is an evil system, and they are trained to do it, paid to do it, and have been persuaded that it's a good thing to do. And that is a real problem. I'm going to do a little more, a few more clips from the Santa Cruz Neighbors Brownies Against Bigotry affair. We called it Brownies Against Bigotry because we were protesting the Santa Cruz Neighbors. I'm going to play a little something from actually the point at which I came in and began and actually asked a question, and I was cut off, and I refused to be cut off, and I continued. Before I do that, however, we'll give you the first word. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert, or you were, and then suddenly you weren't. All right, let's get into the tape, and this again is Santa Cruz Neighbors Tuesday Night, Police Station.
I can feel that frustration, that pain. I'm going to have a little bit of that in my own work.
Homeless Service Center Director.
But the, you know, the reality, I just try to say what it is, and what it is that we don't, where do people go? They go whatever niche they can get into. Again, that's a lot of people motel, they share resources, and when we're in the off season, they might be able to share a motel room. Again, you know, cars moving or not are major alternate housing sources. Occasionally abandoned buildings, but with the price of housing, there's not a lot of, we're not in a city where there's a lot of abandoned buildings where you're going to be able to sleep. And then you're into somebody's backyard or the greenbelt parks. And, you know, that's it.
What are the numbers on emergency shelter or seasonally?
You know, I don't carry those numbers a lot in my head.
And that voice from the back of the room was Bob Patton of the Human Rights Organization asking, you know, what's the story with emergency shelter? And Ken Cole ducks the question. And the reason he does is that he likes to has a much broader number of claims of emergency shelter than actually exist. Emergency shelter means walk-in shelter, where you can actually walk up at 4 o'clock and get a bed or a place to sleep because it's cold outside. And tonight there are, if the armory is still open, and I think it is, 160 at most, and even Cole would admit comfortably probably less than 100, a place for 100 people. Out of 1,500 to 2,000, again, a figure which he differs with, but not by a heck of a lot. I mean, he says there's over 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz City area. So the question was asked him, what about emergency shelter? And he says, I've got different figures, and you'll hear what happens next.
I live in a world of just disparity. So what that number is, ain't enough.
160 it's just, in the winter, 40 in the summer.
Yeah, I don't quite count it the same way because I see other resources that get people off the street.
And that was me coming in from the side saying 40 in the winter, 40 in the summer, 160 in the winter. And he kind of gets vague on me and says, oh, he sees other resources that get people off the street. And there are other resources that will eventually get people off the street, but is there any other emergency shelter? This is the kind of slippery, slidey stuff that Ken does that he doesn't seem to hold. He won't have a candid discussion with you on that makes me feel that I'm talking with a bureaucrat who doesn't want to be really held accountable for the real situation, certainly not morally accountable. Because it's a morally unconscionable situation.
Arguing numbers. I'm just in here saying that there isn't enough, and there is a little bit more in the wintertime because we have the National Guard Armory with a lot of limitations that I won't bore you with, cost and rules and otherwise, but we can get another 75 to 100 people up to the National Guard Armory. only during the winter season, only between November 15th and April 15th by state law.
Again, there isn't enough. Sounds like he's being a very humane kind of guy. But the fact of the matter is there's really a far cry between saying there isn't enough and saying there's room for 10% of the people. 90% of the people have to be outside, and those that are outside face the sleeping ban. That is a considerably different kind of statement than saying, you know, there really isn't enough. We've got to do better. He sounds a little like Emily Riley, who agrees with him. There isn't enough. But she doesn't agree, and nor does Cole advocate changing the sleeping ban law, at least certainly not in any public way. And it's been suggested, you know, you heard Becky Johnson to say earlier, well, Ken is, you know, he answers to a different constituency. He's hired by a nonprofit corporation. You know, he gets some funding from the city council, so he has to be careful. I don't think the city council would lay a glove on him if he took a very strong position around the sleeping ban, though his board of directors might fire him because they got conservatives on that board. Though there are those on the board who have questioned the sleeping ban, although not too vigorously. Don Lane, Catherine Byers, former mayors, are on that board. Let's hear some more of Ken and yours truly.
That's a drop in the bucket, and that's why you will, no matter, see, if I was trying to propose to you, if you were a group of decision makers and you had unlimited resources and we were going to, you know, spend our way out of this problem, I wouldn't really start with shelter. I go right to housing and skip shelter. You know, why do it? And some cities have actually gone to that. New York, San Francisco, Chicago, they've gone to what's called housing first.
And this is a very kind of reasonable sounding statement at first blush. You know, and indeed, we need housing. We don't need shelter. Shelters are miserable places. But to claim this is to take away from the current reality that what you have is the claim that enough people are sheltered to justify criminalizing the rest of them. That's the implicit position of the Santa Cruz City Council. That's the position, probably not directly of Ken Cole, but that's the position of the people he works for. In other words, we really want housing. We're going for housing. We're great. In the meantime, people are getting arrested for sleeping, you know. And they better stay away from panhandling on the medians or they're going to get arrested there, and that's not a good thing for them to get arrested. So therefore, they shouldn't do that. In other words, don't go to sleep at night if you can avoid it. Hide out as far as you can because you don't want to be arrested. In a way, common sense statements, but coming from people in positions of authority who know that this is wrong, they need to take a moral stand. They need to stand up against this kind of obscene policy if it's going to change. And, of course, they don't. And it doesn't change.
Down in the Skid Row area, they find a mentally ill person who's been on the skids for 20 years on the street corner, you know, defecating in the alley every day. They just pick them up, take them, you know, assign a social worker, take them to the housing unit, give them the keys to their housing, say, here's a bar of soap, here's a towel, take a shower, here's your new set of clothes. We're going to start working with you tomorrow on this or that issue. Their house. Now, that's an expensive model, but kind of cuts out all the steps in between.
How many bathrooms do you have that are open at night in Santa Cruz?
I don't, in terms of open to the people off the street, zero.
So you're talking about people taking a dump,
yeah,
or, you know, urinating, and then you're saying you feel the pain of the merchants. How about the humiliation of the person who has no place to go?
Yeah, I feel a lot. Robert, I feel.
We're going to get blamed for
this. This isn't a public debate before.
I want to finish the question.
Okay, no, that's all. Without being interrupted by the police or anybody else.
So what was the question again? Was it about bathrooms or my pain?
Well, the question is it fair, you know, to make that kind of a characterization? I appreciate your bringing up that there is no public facilities open at night. So what do you propose to be done about this? No $5 million shelter, but no public facility.
Yeah. Well, I'm not proposing anything about solving the restroom problem. I'm busy doing what I can do about bigger city. I'm going to take one more question. We're going to get Eric up here.
I was going to be homeless. I was leaving my car, right?
And that's it for the moment for Ken Cole. I'm going to do a final bit to give you an idea of what Eric Seeley is all about from my perspective. But first, here's a little something from Danielle Savage.
Don't believe in the civil world. Nobody ever seems to really get hurt. Don't know what it is that keeps me coming here. People living in fear, 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 fear. People living in fear here. Yeah. Sounds are getting louder and the people seem to cower away from all this mess. Don't need no fucking address to feel validated. Don't believe in the civil world. Nobody ever seems to really get hurt. But I do my part to keep it going round. Shit's gonna hit the ground. Living up and going down. Got the who's who, who's trailing you, who's spinning you, who's pointing fingers at you. Though I allude to the fool, truth be told, I want it too. What you wanna do, where you going to, I'm gonna follow you through. What you wanna do, I'm coming with you.
And now, here's the very end of Eric Seeley. He's the Homeless Resource Officer's presentation. Again, he spent a lot of time kind of involving the audience in how to deal with the problem of a particular homeless person, a case where you weigh the positives and the negatives, and you help this individual by helping her to understand that she has an anger management problem. Here's Seeley talking about this issue, and then what follows, though we may be cut off by the fact that we've only got 9 minutes left in the show. So I'm going to let this run to the end until the beginning of the next show. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be back on Sunday morning, probably earlier than 9:30, because I kind of butt into Thomas Levitt's The Wake-Up Call. I invite you to come on down. And I'll be going to court. Trial starts Wednesday in San Jose. Three mayors are going to court for false arrest when they arrested me twice at city council. In the part of the usual repression that they pull against activists who, you know, don't sit down quickly enough when they tell them to sit down and shut up, so to speak. More about that on Sunday. But here's Eric Seeley, homeless resource officer, who in a way kind of provides a model for the Santa Cruz City Council in his own somewhat twisted way.
Two, she doesn't take part in the solution. All she wants to do is point out the negative. You know, that's if I go to my family barbecues and all that, gosh, well, and usually it's, you know, third-hand information about what's going on in my life. Or she loves to vent about the homeless. You know, thanks, Anthony. I don't want to, you know, I do that for a living and I'm happy with this. I don't need to hear your side of it. I want to think of the positive. So see what I'm getting at? So the only caution I would say is that if you're out there to do this type of thing, if you're whatever aspect you choose to do it in, you know, and a lot of people understand this, you can truly be empathetic and caring and not always be able to do what they think is the right thing. Sometimes you have to be like a parent. You have to be the strong, loving type that has to say no. And sometimes you have to be permissive. But, you know, there's times when you have to be discipline-oriented. Okay? I thank you for taking all this time.
Questions. I'm sure they'll entertain a couple questions before they leave. We need to be out of here shortly. Well, I'm going to go up.
Thank
you very much for coming.
Pointing out. that somebody has a question for RC who ignores Bob Patton's question. It was Scott Graham's question, another activist. And this is the period afterward where we're attempting to get Eric to answer a question to him. You can hear what goes on here.
You want to take him in a private place? Do what you do so I can ask the question to him, okay?
If it's kind of hard to hear, we're asking him just. Eric is avoiding questions by turning to other people and talking to them, which is kind of a political favorite of politicians.
Yeah. I have a question for you. I live over by Garfield Park, and there's that empty lot.
Yeah, somebody had to ask me a question.
Like we're in there. A couple of vehicles that actually have a logo that's spray painted onto it. It looks like a...
And it looks like I'm not going to be able to find that segment, but it's not that easy to hear. My apologies. But it certainly was easy for me to hear when I was being subjected to it. I had a similar experience with Eric Seeley the next day when he was out busting people for, well, he was busting this one kid for a marijuana possession warrant. And he had two other officers assisting him in this task. And it was called over by Swami, who's one of our local holy men, who you sometimes find in front of the coffee roasting company or thereabouts. And so I went to and found Officer Seeley with his signature smirk on his face, unfortunately. And I don't mean to sound prejudiced, but that is how he looks with his dark glasses on and this very broad smile. He'll stand in front of you with his arms crossed, staring at you, and I don't know, won't answer any questions that you ask. And in fact, I have this on tape, and we'll probably be playing it on Sunday as a sort of a... an example of what goes on in the streets when you're trying to interact with the police and ask questions. Seeley wouldn't find that so easy to get away with in a more public venue, because I actually caught him behind a building where I was the only other person present with a tape recorder, and he could afford to do that. I wanted to walk through, wouldn't let me go through. A man was being written this citation for a marijuana warrant, and I talked to him afterward, and he confirmed for me that it was a sort of a bogus ticket, the reason that they called for backup was because when he was told to sit down, he said, I'm nonviolent, I'm not going to hurt you. I'd be happy to, you know, to sign a citation. I just don't feel like, you know, sitting down so that you can, you know, stand over me in a towering manner. He didn't like the kind of domineering approach that Seeley was using, but he offered no resistance. He was willing to sign the citation, so they called for backup, and they went through this intimidation routine, and Seeley, he ate the whole thing up. He was just pleased as punch. And my impression, again, since I've seen the officer from day one, I don't know if it's day one, but certainly back in 2001 at Camp Paradise, where he was patrolling this homeless run encampment and harassing campers, is that there hasn't really been much change. That it's kind of ironic to call him a homeless service center officer, because he doesn't seem to really, A, have any services for the homeless, and B, there's no homeless input or, you know, accountability. He's simply kind of the token cop that I guess the authorities claim has some relation to dealing with the homeless question. Of course, what that means is keeping the homeless in line. And I suppose that shouldn't be any real surprise, and so I'm going to let that one go. And I'm going to go myself, and I'm going to remind you to come on back, as I have before, and to stay tuned for other free radio programs where we may be needing community support soon. I encourage you to be alert for that, because that may be coming up on the roster pretty quickly for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Don't want to reveal any trade secrets here, but we may be needing some help from the community. And I'm going to go out on yet another song of Danielle Savage. Coming up soon, if not immediately, is From the Cream to the Dregs with our very own Uncle 60s Dennis, with tunes you perhaps knew or perhaps you didn't, but you're going to hear them anyway.
When he was validating, I'll spin and it's there for the taking. If I'm not spinning, I'm wasting my time. And I won't need to make you fine. I might have a few things to teach you, so you never know what you could have come in with some doubt. Overcome it. I have it for I am. Can't you see it's written in my plan? You may not understand, but in the end I'll come out the bigger man. To the lost I will abide. Keep the demons a reason on my side. Deliver it in this deliverance. I'm convinced this is the way it's always been. And I'll get rid of the opposition. I got no room for that position in this space. That's just the way it is. I have the for I am. Can't you see it's written in my plan? You may not understand, but in the end, I'll come out the bigger man. To the lost. The demons of reason on the side. I'm here to tell myself that my day will come. Oh, yeah. Hey, Mr. Mr. Everybody can be. Which way you gonna sit? I thought you'd never. You really got me in a bind. I'm so far ahead, but you left me behind. I seem to have lost myself. I had to pay the bill somehow. I played the part for oh so long. Forgot about now. I have it for I am. Can you see it's written? Simple militant, the pretty eyes divide. Inside they confide, but they still don't have the time to find what's behind. Many faces has a man. They write him many plans, but they still don't understand. Inside this land is a history band. Though we choose not to see it, it's inside the grand plan. Prolific seeding leads to inbreeding clones. How far the truth was thrown, the lies we condone. Sitting on the phone, holding bones, dialing phones, playing other spades with not even a groan. It's chaos, Papa Show. Yeah, no mind ceases to be blown. But what we know is what we own. Overshown them to the bone.
shock there was not, for the box is flawed. Consumption and destruction has become the new god, and souls are flying everywhere. We try to fight against it, but in truth we don't care. The passing revolution is here to change our future. Listen up, kids, don't scream and shout. It's here to fill our minds with doubt. And souls are flying everywhere. We try to fight it, but we just don't care. It's getting old, so comfortable, living in this luxury, and off in a not too distant place. Souls are dying for me, and our luxury. Stands, reprimand man fans, for regrouping clans, divided we stand. The reptile eye stands high on the great divide. We're of the same species, but we gotta pick our sides. So give me a reason why I should even try. Have you ever seen a bird cry? And along these dusty streets, there's an aching in my feet. Such a beat down feet to reclaim what I eat and the street. Give me a list of your motives and explanations of how you choose to spend your time. Perception is obsolete in this uniform time. It's such a crime to find ourselves, for it blows away the lines they try to draw around us, and they're gonna drop the dying frown. Come the right time now. Come the right time now. So don't raise your fist in anger or bomb another country, and give you vital reason to believe it wasn't conceived in greed. It's the conspiracy theory getting us weary, not knowing what to believe anymore. I'm bitter, crooked in soul, cause my politicians is acting like whores. I'm just trying to find my way. Somebody told me yesterday how it pays to be a slave, but he was just depraved, running from his grave. Can we find some harmony? Get rid of all this misery, shitting on the minds of those who tell us how we ought to be. The passing revolution is here to change our future. Listen up, kids, don't scream and shout. It's here to fill our minds with doubt. And souls are flying everywhere. We try to fight it, but we just don't care. Living in this luxury, off in a not too distant place. Souls are dying for me, and our luxury, and our SUVs,
Hey, it's Uncle Dennis here. I want to welcome you to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and thank Robert for the last couple hours of fine programming here. Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. I'm going to be here till 11 o'clock tonight, and the show's called From the Cream to the Dregs. We're going to be playing a little music from the 60s and the 70s. Open the brew of the week here in a little while, and then at 9 o'clock we have the Earth First Update. 10 o'clock we have our Spotlight Group of the Week, so stay tuned for all of that right here on the Mighty Underground Radio Station. 12 years without a license. You think in that time we could have afforded one, you know. Who knows? Well, we still don't have a license, and we're still on the air. And I guess it has something to do with our evil ways.
You got to change your evil ways, baby. Before I
Thank you.